Hello and welcome to Beyond Reproach. No, we're not doing that.
We, as in you, just did it.
I don't know why that came out of my mouth.
I feel like you're always trying to put a new stank on it.
Yeah, that was the wrong stank. That was foul.
I'm Stephanie Domingo. This is Tux over here.
Okay, we're going with it.
It's done.
We be drinking. We yes. be swearing. We yes. be acting a fool.
Yes.
Ugh, gross. I can't believe I just did that.
It's all right.
So, welcome to Beyond Reproach. This is the show about scandals and scandalousness in American politics and government.
Show enough.
And, yeah. today is our last episode of season two. Oh. We extended her for two extra episodes because of Miss Rona.
Yeah.
But it's the end, the finale.
It's bittersweet, this finale.
But we'll be back.
Yes.
And we're not going away, really, because we're doing our summer break re-release series. Mm-hmm. So keep tuning in every other Monday, and you'll be hearing from us.
There'll be details on the Insta. IG. Instagram.
Today.
I'm sorry. I was just thinking, my partner lives in Astoria, and it's very old, the neighborhood. He lives next to these Greek people, and I saw a man using a flip phone this morning.
Oh.
And I cackled.
I mean, where do you even get one?
I don't know, but like...
From the past.
Yeah. I don't know. I just feel like him using an iPhone would be equally jarring.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true. Yeah.
It's like, damned if you don't.
He pulls out like a Zach Morris car phone.
Yes. Had nothing to do with nothing. Please, Tim, cut that out.
Let's just start over.
Yeah, seriously.
When I was a kid at school learning the golden rule, teacher often used to say, if you don't tell a lie, there's not a reason why you can't be like Washington someday. How could Washington be a married man and never, never tell a lie?
So today we are drinking. It's called the National Guard 7th Regiment Punch.
Wow.
Yes.
Sounds so official.
A tongue twister. Stephanie's story is from the 1860s. This cocktail was probably around before the 1860s, but it was published by Jerry Thomas in 1862. So I figured it was kind of appropriate for Stephanie's story.
My story is... like early 1800s.
Okay.
Yeah, it ends in the 1860s.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Yes.
It ends with a bang.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I don't know the full history of this cocktail. Some of these more obscure ones are a little bit hard to pin down, so I don't know exactly when it was created or who created it, but the cocktail is named after New York City's 7th Regiment, which at a certain point in history, that was the National Guard, that one regiment. Now, any state's militia could be considered the National Guard, but at a certain point in history, it was only the 7th Regiment of New York State.
Hmm.
The 7th Regiment was known as a silk stocking regiment because it was made up of fancy men.
Oh,
yes.
What?
It was basically like Fifth Avenue, Blue Blood, like social register types.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's so fascinating.
Silk stocking regiment.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were basically more concerned about showing off their fancy uniforms than actual combat.
I get it.
Yeah. During the Civil War, they were supposed to go fight at Gettysburg, and they were actually on their way to Gettysburg when the New York City draft riots broke out. So they were called back to the city, and that was the only combat they saw in the entire Civil War, was going back to New York to fight the draft riots.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
I actually mentioned the draft riots in my story.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, perfect. That's funny.
Yeah.
I did not know that when I chose this cocktail, but I'm glad that I did. I went back and forth on a few different options, so I'm glad this is the one I went with. This is one of the more unique cocktails we've ever had, I'll say.
Such a nice way of putting it.
Yes.
It's special.
Yes, it is. Yes. It is made with lemon juice and sugar, raspberry syrup, cognac, and a sweet American wine called Catawba. It's made with Catawba grapes, which are a hybrid of wild grapes that are native to the North American East Coast and some like French wine grapes or European wine grapes. Catawba wine can be kind of hard to find because it's gone out of style.
Yeah.
But at this point in history in the 1860s...
This is like the only wine, right?
I don't know if it was the only wine, but it was definitely easier to get your hands on than like European
the only wine
fancy
here.
Wine. Yeah. It's very sweet. If anyone's ever had
Red Cat
from the Finger Finger Lakes. Red Cat is made up of mostly Catawba grapes. Fancy wine people look down on wine that tastes like grape juice. The word they use for it is foxy. It's called a foxy wine if it tastes like grape juice.
That's hilarious.
Yes, they say that it has a wild, musky animal smell.
What?
It does not. How? It tastes like fucking Concord grape juice. They're just trying to poo-poo our amateur American wine.
Just say like it tastes
American
like it's for
wine.
Babies.
Yeah. Like, I mean, yeah, it does. I don't love it because I don't like a sweet wine anyways. But I'm hoping at least that in the cocktail with the cognac and everything else, it's going to be okay. If you want to make this cocktail yourself, obviously you can look for Red Cat. I think that's distributed around the country. It's from my home area where I grew up in the Finger Lakes.
So are they like paid in like cocktails or something? Like why?
I have no idea why it's named after that regiment.
I think in the Civil War there was like alcohol rations.
That would make sense then. Yeah.
But like this is a fancy ass cocktail to be like mixing and rationing, you know?
I don't know. Maybe the 7th Regiment just really liked their Catawba wine and cognac.
Yeah.
If you can't find a foxy wine that's made with wild North American grapes, you could just use any sweet wine. A white Zinfandel would be like perfect.
Oh, yeah.
A later reprint of this recipe actually calls for sherry instead of Catawba wine, too. So you could do it with sherry instead.
Yeah.
Which might be good. Should we taste it?
Let's cheers, of course.
Oh, yeah. Cheers. Ooh. Ooh. All right. So served with a straw. You're supposed to drink it with a straw. It specifically says that in the recipe.
It's sweet. It's not. I was expecting it to be a lot sweeter.
It tastes like juice.
Ooh. Wow, it is sweet. Okay.
It's real sweet.
It tastes like juice.
Like you're drinking a juice box.
Yes.
Some people might be into that. It's strong, too. There's 2 ounces of cognac and 2 ounces of wine.
It tastes like
juice. And a little touch of rum, too.
I think it's a really good cocktail. Like, maybe I would even order it out if I was feeling frisky, but I can't have 2 of these.
No. If you guys really like a sweet cocktail, you might enjoy this, so you should try it. I think when we come back for the break, I'm going to try it with a dry rosé and see if that's any more palatable for modern tastes.
A dry wine would drop the sweetness in half.
Significantly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never had this brand of sweet red wine, but I've had Red Cat, and it is powerfully sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And I love sugar. Like, a child would be like, can you add some water to
this? It does not taste like alcohol at all.
Yeah. It tastes like that juice box that we've all had, like, as kids, like the little mini grape juice.
Totally, yeah.
But sweeter.
To sweetness.
Yes. So, the end of last season, we did, like, a dispelling of myths. I did Davy Crockett. Tux did Johnny Appleseed.
Yes, ruining American legends.
Yes, we're kind of doing the same, but with bigger people. We were very ambitious this time around.
So ambitious.
Maybe too ambitious.
I know.
You be the judge. So I am going to be myth busting Abraham Lincoln.
Ooh.
Honest All Abe. Right. I don't know if there's a stronger American myth than that of Abraham Lincoln. We love him.
We sure do. Everybody can get behind Abraham Lincoln.
Everybody. One would say. So to quote Lerone Bennett Jr. in his book, Forced into Glory, no other American story is so enduring. No other American story is so comforting. No other American story is so false.
Oh, okay.
Lincoln was far from being the poster child of racial harmony and like enlightened white leadership. He low-key kind of sucked.
Okay.
Yeah. So what if I told you that Abraham Lincoln wasn't this great humanitarian, or that he wasn't even a Republican or an abolitionist, or that his Emancipation Proclamation didn't free a single enslaved person, or that he was just another white supremacist president who just happened to be in the Civil War. Like, just happened to be presiding over the Civil War, I should say.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot, yeah. So I'm going to propose a toast to Lincoln. I'm going to grab my drink. To Lincoln, a man of his era.
Mm-hmm.
The South hates you, but haters gonna hate. You know, they're required by law to hate, actually. In the North, we love you. We think that you're the best. You kind of weren't, but it's okay. Let's raise a drink to Mr. Abraham Lincoln. To lies.
To lies.
To sweet little lies.
Very sweet.
Very, yes.
This
How
cocktail is.
Yeah. Right.
Very sweet little lies.
So apologies, everyone, for ruining your favorite president. It's not my intention, and he's not my favorite president at all.
Rachel from hashtag history is going to be very upset.
I'm sorry, Rachel. I'm really sorry, actually. No, it's okay. It's okay. You'll see at the end that it's totally fine.
Yeah. I'm sure she's done her research on him if she loves him as much as she does.
I mean, again, I'll mention this later, but a lot has been said about Lincoln. But yeah, my favorite president, to quote the poet Young Jeezy, my president is black, my Lambo is blue, and I'd be goddamned if my rims ain't too. So please know that he's only your favorite because his legend is the most mythologized. He has the best statues. He has the best shrines. He has the best marketing team. Like, it's not your fault.
Yeah.
So my goal is to present 5 inconvenient facts that are kind of glossed over, if mentioned at all, in his bio. So let's start with what I learned in school.
Yeah.
I learned that Abraham Lincoln was born in a shitty log cabin in Kentucky. It's true, right?
Yeah.
He was tall. He was physically off-putting. Some said he was ugly. I'm like, that's petty. He was prone to depression. His dead parents didn't help that. He was a senator in Illinois before becoming the great president who made our self-evident truths less of a lie. He wrote the Emancipation Proclamation, and he was the hero who was so morally compelled to free the 4 million enslaved people forced to build the country for free. He put the Republicans on the map because he won the Civil War. He saved us all, really, if you think about it. And then he was killed by some bitter bitch with 3 names. The end.
The end.
Did I miss anything? Like, what did you learn in school?
No, that's all correct. He wore a big hat.
Oh, yes. It's true.
He had a beard because he looked better with a beard than without.
Yes, yes. A little girl told him that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he carried notes in his hat.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, so there's a lot of weird things that we know about him.
I've also heard, I might need to save this for another episode, but I've also heard that there are rumblings that he might have been a homosexual.
Yes, that he was a gay man.
Yes.
People are very upset about that.
Yeah. He had like a male roommate for a very long time.
Over 1,500 books have been written, biographies have been written about Lincoln. So, yeah, there's a lot that we know and a lot of speculation and, yeah, it's just a lot. So, first up, myth number one is the belief that Lincoln was this great humanitarian who bore malice toward none, as they spoke back then.
Yes, and we spoke a different language.
We did speak a different language. According to his generals, Lincoln led brilliantly, not just from his mind, but also from his heart, Tux. He led from his heart. Mm-hmm. General William Sherman called it his greatness and his goodness.
Aww.
Really sweet, right?
Mm-hmm.
I kept seeing this in my research, how good, honest, honorable, and humane he was. Tolstoy wrote, "The greatness of Napoleon, Caesar, or Washington is only moonlight to the son of Lincoln. His example is universal and will last 1,000 years. He was bigger than his country, bigger than all the presidents together, and as a great character, he will live as long as the world lives."
Wow.
So even the Russians were fucking with him.
Yeah.
Suspicious. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, what's up? What's the gag here?
Good PR.
Extremely good PR. Maybe he was good and humane. You know, I don't really know his life or the inner workings of his mind. No one does. But he presided over some seriously fucked up shit. I don't know much about war or civil wars, but I know that it's not one big, like, drum circle.
Yeah.
Like singing Kumbaya. The truth was that under Lincoln, the Union Army pushed a very serious scorched earth policy in the South. He wanted to win by any means necessary. Entire towns were destroyed, meaning women and children could catch these cannons too. Like, women were raped, people were killed without trial or even charge.
Mm-hmm. I think that's part of why the, like, legend of the Confederacy is such a big thing today, because people are like, the Union was so...
Yes, I will get to that.
Okay.
I like that you're smelling what I haven't even put down, but you're smelling it. You're like, I feel something coming. Entire towns were destroyed. There were so many civilians killed during 1 month, during this march, that many northern historians even considered it terrorism at the time.
Wow.
It was bad. This incident is referred to as General Sherman's March to the Sea.
Mm-hmm.
General Sherman is the one saying that he's leading from his heart, mind you.
Oh, okay.
His greatness and goodness. That General Sherman.
So they're like cops. They're all...
Yeah, basically. Many historians still regard it as among one of the worst atrocities committed on American soil. If you ignore all the native genocide, I guess.
Yeah.
To make matters even worse, there were union orders. I'm glad you're sitting. There were union orders to loot and burn.
Oh, be still my heart. I could never.
When I read that, I wept. I thought, not the CVS.
Yeah, I know. Oh, but poor Target.
Oh, man. So they burned Atlanta to the ground.
Yeah.
And then General Sherman took his army. They marched 300 miles, just like creating chaos, burning shit, to Savannah.
Uh-huh.
And the explicit purpose of this march was to terrorize the Georgians, just like regular Georgians, away from the Confederacy. It was fucked up.
Yeah.
In truth, Lincoln was no humanitarian. Duh. You know? He reluctantly blessed this march, but he was aware of what Sherman was going to do.
Yeah.
And he's like, do it.
Yeah. Don't tell anyone I knew.
Yeah. Shh. Greatness and goodness, remember? So yeah, that's my first myth. He was not a humanitarian. He was a wartime president. So myth number two is the claim that Lincoln's GOP was a historically constitution-loving one. This, too, is lies.
Yeah.
It was true that the Republican Party rose to power during Lincoln. However, his Whig Party affiliation is rarely mentioned.
Yeah. It wasn't like he invented the Republicans. And
exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And he died. So his image was carefully crafted by the Republicans.
Sure.
They were very quick to claim him postmortem. They marketed themselves as a party of the victorious Union.
Uh-huh.
They were tired of being known as like the raggedy successors of the Whigs.
Yeah.
Like they wanted a rebrand.
Yeah.
They didn't want to share this great emancipator with some like defunct party.
I see.
It makes perfect sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It makes perfect sense. You know, it was embarrassing. But in reality, Winken.
Wink, wink.
He was a Whig named Lincoln. In reality, Lincoln was a Whig for more years than he was a Republican. When he was in Illinois, he was the first to join the party, basically. Like, as a young man, as soon as it was for him, he was in it. And he became a faithful member in the Illinois state legislature between 1834 and 1841. And he, like all Whigs, he believed in economic and industrial growth from a really strong bank and a really strong central government with a lot of federal monies for infrastructure and high tariffs. He believed in all these things. But, you know, when his party imploded, he had no other choice than to join the Republicans if he wanted to run for president. So that's what he did in 1860. Did you know that he was a Whig at all?
No, I didn't know he was a Whig. I knew from the Charles Sumner story that the Whigs and the Free Soiler parties kind of like collapsed into the Republicans, but I didn't know which party he belonged to before.
Yeah, exactly. Most of what Americans in general are kind of taught in schools are a mixture of myths and fabrications. Beautiful lies, as I said previously. But a lot of Republicans today still claim that Lincoln was this staunch defender of the Constitution, and nothing could be further from the truth.
Yeah.
Like, it's insane that they would still be saying this in 2020. We've all had the internet for a while. Like, this shit's a lie. So Lincoln was a wartime tyrant who didn't give two shits about the Constitution. Dude was so bold that he suspended habeas corpus for the entire war.
Wow.
So you could just be detained.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, why am I detained? And they'd be like, ask Lincoln. What?
Can I see him, please?
Yeah, I know, right? They put you on the list.
Yeah.
So, he didn't give a shit about the Constitution. He ordered the military to arrest tens of thousands of opponents. He closed 300 newspapers. He censored all the telegraphs. He rigged elections in the North.
Mm-hmm.
He intimidated voters, of course, Democratic voters. And here in New York, hundreds of protesters against the draft were shot to quell the race riot. That
by the 7th Regiment, apparently.
Yeah. Crazy.
Their punch.
Yeah, he did a lot of really crazy shit. He actually had his biggest Democratic opponent in Ohio. It was a senator by the name of Congressman Vallandigham. He had him deported for talking too spicy.
Deported to where?
To Canada.
Was he Canadian?
No. No, he was not Canadian.
What?
He's just like, get the fuck out of here. It's like, actually deport me to Canada.
Incredible. Horrific that he did this. But it's also kind of amazing.
There's a really interesting story about all of it. I don't want to get into it, but that's like the least crazy part of this story.
Okay, I hope this is foreshadowing for season three, because I need to hear more of this story.
I might be coming back to this one. Wow. But yeah, he was very, very super anti-Lincoln. Uh-huh. And just talking real spicy about Lincoln and slavery. Of course, he was pro.
Sure.
Of course, like, the king of the northern races lived in Ohio and was deported because he was that bad. Yeah, but I probably will be returning to the story next season. Stay tuned. So I know that this is all probably like classic Civil War shit, but we really don't learn this side of Lincoln in school, that he was like this warmongering Whig.
It's easier if you reduce somebody down to a very easily understood myth.
Yeah, one-dimensional.
Yeah.
Like, he's just good. So myth number three is that Lincoln was an abolitionist. He was not. He opposed slavery and its expansion. To him, it was fundamentally unjust. And many teachers and early historians conflate him being against slavery with him favoring racial equality, which he most certainly did not.
Yeah.
One of his major beefs with slavery was that it created an economic environment that disadvantaged poor white people.
Wow. Okay.
Poor white people.
Just like his VP, Andrew Johnson.
Yeah.
Basically the same platform. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Wow. Okay.
Poor people like the ones he grew up with. Poor people like him, basically.
Yeah.
He's like, this shit's not fair. Like, why can't I afford them? Uh-huh. So this was a very popular view in the North and the Midwest. Fears of economic competition, ingrained white supremacy made a lot of people anti-slavery and like anti-black at the same time.
Sure.
Though Lincoln argued that the founding fathers' phrase, all men are created equal, did apply to black people, he didn't think that they should have the same social and political rights.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a little bit of a contradiction,
sure. A little bit, but... When his opponent in the Illinois Senate race, Stephen Douglas, accused him of supporting Negro equality, he was like basically calling him a black Republican.
Uh-huh.
Lincoln made what he believed pretty clear. He said, I will say then that I am not, nor ever have been, in favor of bringing about in any way the social and political equality of the black and white races. He went on to say that he was against black people having the right to vote, to serve on juries, to hold office, and to intermarry whites. However, he believed that even black men had the right to improve their station in life and that they should be paid for their work.
Okay.
He said they should enjoy the fruits of their labor. In this way, they were equal to white men.
Separate but equal, I guess.
Yeah. For this reason, slavery was unjust to him. So black people could be paid for their work, but they shouldn't be full citizens.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is kind of what we got.
Yeah.
A little bit, unfortunately. So Lincoln was anti-slavery and its expansion westward. I want to make this clear. I don't want the Lincoln stans to come for me. He was anti-slavery. Okay. He was no abolitionist. Abolitionists wanted to end slavery immediately, not just its expansion. Like, period.
Yeah.
In 1858, he suggested that perhaps the country should take 100 years to ultimately free black people.
100 years?
Yes. So just for context, my mom was born in 1954 in Alabama. So she would have been freed when she was 4.
Fuck.
Just think on that.
Yeah.
When I first read that, I'm like, okay, I need to put some respect on John Wilkes Booth's name. Because he did my community a solid in a way.
I mean, he did it for the wrong reasons.
Oh, but, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Damn. Okay.
But this was early Lincoln. This was like his first operating system. This is Lincoln 1.0.
Totally. This was not where he was by the end of the war or by the time John Wilkes Booth came.
Yes. This is like 8 years before he met his end. This is like Lincoln 1.0.
Yeah, okay.
His racism, his views on race would evolve over that period of time because he made a black friend.
Aw.
Frederick Douglass.
Yeah.
Poor Frederick Douglass, being his only black friend. But it's okay. But he helped him.
Yeah.
So myth number four is that Lincoln was this great emancipator. And this is a fun one. This too is lies.
Yeah.
Do you know what the purpose of the Civil War was? According to the North. I'm sorry. Tux, you look so uncomfortable.
I'm not even going to answer because I know that my answer is wrong.
The purpose, according to the Congress, was not to interfere with the rights or establish institutions in those states, but to preserve the Union with the rights of the several states unimpaired.
So it wasn't to force the South to end slavery. It was to force the South to stop fucking with the North's.
To unite, basically.
Yeah.
The reason was to preserve the Union. On the day that the war started, only 7 states of the Deep South had seceded. There were more enslaved people within the Union than outside it, and Lincoln had no intention of freeing any of them. I think there's a lot of confusion on this point because most of us learn that the South seceded to keep their enslaved people in bondage. This is true. Mm-hmm. They were warring to keep slavery. Yeah. That's why they seceded. But because of this, many people jumped to the assumption that the North took the contrary position, meaning that they went to war to abolish slavery. This is untrue.
Yeah.
This is not true at all. The proclamation was basically a legal maneuver to help the war effort. The North was losing in the beginning, like mm-hmm. big time, because yeah. the South wasn't shit. They brought their enslaved people to the battlefield and used uh-huh. them as shields, basically. Because back then, it was a numbers game, and yeah. they had more people, so they had the upper hand. So Lincoln's proclamation, it reads like a legal brief, because it basically is. He thought the only way that he could level the playing field was if he used the War Powers Act, which means that you can take your enemy's property in battle.
Okay.
So his proclamation was a threat. Give up secession or your enslaved people will be set free. If the South had returned to the Union, they would have been able to keep the practice of slavery going. So yeah, they just wanted to keep the Union. So that was the real reason.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm just going to say that again for the people in the back. We did not go to war to end slavery. We went to war to preserve the Union. And the Emancipation Proclamation was a warning at best. At worst, it was like a plot designed not to emancipate enslaved Africans, but to keep as many in slavery as possible until Lincoln could gain support for his very gradual 100-year plan.
Good times.
Right? Okay. At the end of the day, what Lincoln was probably trying to do was outmaneuver this really growing emancipation tide. Like, yeah. it was really big in the North and also in the Midwest. And this tide had reached such a dangerous intensity that it threatened his ability to govern and run the war machinery. Like, there were a lot of people in his own party that were just like, this shit needs to end now.
Yeah. Basically, like, the radical Republicans versus the sort of moderates.
Yeah.
The radicals would be like today's like AOC.
Exactly.
Versus like the Nancy Pelosi's and Chuck Schumer's and Joe Biden's would be the ones that were like, slavery's like, it's not for us, but it's okay.
Yeah, just let's let it ride for 100 years, yeah. you know? Let's see what happens. So most people are taught, and I was taught this, that Lincoln is like when we started to straighten up and fly right. This is when we started to be like a real country. Nope. But this shouldn't be shocking given where we are in 2020, that this is not what happened. We did not start to straighten up and fly right and treat non-white people like white people. Tux just spat out his drink. What?
Why would we do that?
So even his number two, your man's Stewart, he was the Secretary of State at the time, and he had major issues with the proclamation. Mm. He said that it was an illusion.
Yeah.
He was really pissed off. He said, we show our sympathy with the slaves by emancipating the slaves where we cannot reach them and holding them in bondage where we can set them free. So the proclamation, it freed enslaved people in the Confederacy. So it's like, they're not following you. Like, yeah. what are you even doing? This means yeah. nothing. They're not fucking with you like that. So yeah, we as a country, I think, need to let go of this myth that, you know, good old Lincoln and a few other benevolent white people gave freedom to black people. Lincoln didn't free anyone. Mm-hmm. They freed themselves, really. The story is that black people and abolitionists like Frederick Douglass took their freedom. Douglass is the one who said power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has and it never will. Yeah, I watched this really amazing PBS documentary. It's where I got a lot of my information. It's called The Abolitionists.
Okay.
It talks about 5 abolitionists who each did more than Lincoln did yeah. for the movement. They wrote the 13th Amendment. Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert, a lot of people think that Lincoln did. No.
Damn.
He didn't write shit.
Well, even the 13th Amendment is fucked up because it yeah. doesn't actually end slavery at all.
I know.
It just like changes. Okay, sorry.
I will be doing that next season.
Okay.
So I'm not even really going to talk about it. But credit for the 13th Amendment, I'll just say this, should go to abolitionists like Frederick Douglass, Wendell Phillips, and William Lloyd Garrison, and to the radical Republicans like Seward in Congress that were really, really pushing for something. They pushed through this act called the Second Confiscation Act. And it formed the legal basis for the proclamation. It's so hard to do this scandal because so much happened and I had to just overlook a lot of things that I plan on revisiting next season. Coming soon.
Yeah.
Coming soon.
To a podcast near you.
Yes. So yeah, the Radical Republicans, they had this Second Confiscation Act that formed the framework for the Emancipation Proclamation. And 2 months later, Lincoln came out with his, you know, executive order that's basically like, yeah, what these people said, some of it's okay. I have spoken.
Yeah. I did know that he was sort of like somewhere in the middle, more moderate than the radicals. But as the war went on, the radicals kind of had his ear. He had a lot of people around him that were on the radical side.
He had a lot of people around him. Anyways, this brings me to my fifth and final myth, is that Lincoln was the least racist president. Bitch, please.
I mean, maybe by then, at that point in history? I mean,
maybe if you squint and tilt your head and someone kicks you in the face, maybe.
Yeah, okay.
However, I'm sure he would say that he didn't have a racist bone in his body.
I mean...
And he's right, because bones aren't racist. You know? So this... Last night, I was Googling. This is the thing that I was laughing about earlier. Just on a whim, I'm like... Can you have racist bones? Let me look, actually. No, I said, I Googled, I have no racist bones. And there's this hilarious article from Washington Post. It's a humor piece. It says, I have no racist bones, but this exoskeleton has propped me up for decades. And it's a picture of Trump, and it talks about his racist exoskeleton. It's so funny.
That's
incredible.
Oh,
it's
my God.
So funny. Yeah, bones aren't racist. Exoskeletons are racist.
I see.
So
yes.
Now you guys know. I'm going to put it in my in the show notes. It's so funny. I roared with laughter. So how racist was he? Really just a regular amount. I already mentioned that during his Douglas debate, he was kind of pressured to reaffirm the fact that like, yeah, no, I'm racist like everyone else.
Yeah.
When Douglas was saying like, no, you're a black Republican. You want them to be able to vote and like live their lives. He's like, no. I'm just like you.
Yeah. I mean, we want to free them and stuff, but they're not going to be able to marry white people, you know?
Exactly. So, yeah, a lot of historians, they look at this debate and saying, obviously, that he was just forced to exaggerate his position just to pander to the crowd. And also, it was true. He did not want us to have those sort of freedoms.
Yeah.
But he just went extra with it. I do believe that, but he was also very racist. He, for one, loved to tell nigger jokes. In private, also in speeches. Speeches. Yes, we have speeches with him.
No.
Yeah. And it just gets worse. He enjoyed blackface minstrel shows. He referred to Sojourner Truth as auntie. He called grown men boy. Yeah.
That was just kind of the culture, I guess, at the time. Not to excuse it in any way, but like, that's, everybody was doing that. Minstrel shows were just part of American culture.
That was just like comedy back then. Yeah. However, he enthusiastically supported Illinois' constitution. Illinois was super racist back then. Super racist. Like, black people weren't allowed to move to the state. And to just get into the state, you had to pay a $1,000 bond.
Jesus.
Yeah, it was crazy. But he was all for it, and he also backed these infamous black codes, which deprived the few black people living there of, like, the most basic rights. He also applauded the Fugitive Slave Act.
Wow.
Yeah, that required Northerners to basically capture people who had escaped their plantation and return them to their owners. Not only was he for this shit, he defended it in court.
What?
He represented... Oh, a slave owner getting their property back.
Fuck.
Right? However, this is not even the most racist thing he's done. I'm ending with my favorite story. So I learned that he was planning to ask Congress in his second State of the Union message to approve not the Emancipation Proclamation, but like his real plan.
Oh.
Completely different plan. It called for the deportation and the colonization of all the black people living in this country.
I've heard mention of this before.
This was his solution to racism.
To just get rid of all black people?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Colonization was a pretty cowardly, ancient way of resolving the issue of like a biracial community.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, we'll just get rid of them.
Damn.
Get this. This is the real kicker. He wanted black people who were freed to voluntarily remove themselves from the United States. No doubt it would be similar to how the Native American people voluntarily removed themselves, also known as genocide. Mm-hmm. He wanted all black people to leave the country that they built with generations of their blood. He thought that white people would never let black people live as full citizens.
I could see that.
Yeah.
But that's also not really a solution.
Yeah, so when I read that, I'm like, he's not wrong, but like, this really hurts my feelings, Lincoln. Like, yeah. Come on. He wanted to ship black people to Liberia, Haiti, or even Central America. Basically, we weren't allowed to go home, but we had to get the hell out of here.
The fuck?
Yeah. Can you believe this shit? He's just like, we're just going to put you on a boat and just send you somewhere because we're tired of looking at your black faces.
And did Central America, Liberia, and Haiti want like hundreds of thousands of...
Yeah, millions at this point. Yeah. So it's really crazy. Prior to the war, Southerners, this is insane, they viewed themselves as prisoners in their own country because they were surrounded by all of these angry black people who had kidnapped, raped, and forced to work for free. And on top of this, they felt that this growing tide of abolitionism was like threatening their standing in the country. Like they felt like they were, you know, outdated and overwhelmed and everyone was against them and it wasn't really their country anymore. And I'm like, this sounds familiar. This sounds real familiar, actually. But thankfully, he wanted to win the war and keep the country intact more than he wanted ethnic cleansing. So we're still here.
Wow.
So he had to scrap his like racist pile of shit at the 25th hour in favor of emancipation because he wanted to preserve the Union.
Yeah. Okay.
So the real Abraham Lincoln was a highly contentious figure. As president, a lot of people despise him, Democrats, Southerners just generally, and a lot of people in his own party, as I mentioned before, weren't fucking with him, even in his own cabinet. In 1862, Frederick Douglass described him as a miserable tool of traitors and rebels, and quite a genuine representative of American prejudice and Negro hatred. So they had kind of a falling out.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
Especially if you only have one black friend. Odds are you're saying, like, crazy shit to him all the time, and he's just having to eat it because you're president. Yeah. I'm sorry, Tux.
No, I'm glad that I know all this stuff, you know. I mean, I knew that he was more of a moderate, and that it was the radicals were the real ones.
Yeah.
And that he was not a radical Republican.
But if he was, he would never have been elected. Like, yeah, Seward absolutely. Would never have been elected. Like, he was too radical for the country and for the party. So it makes sense, but I think that we gloss over a lot of things, and it doesn't help us in any way. We do ourselves a disservice to, like, paint him as... I'm sorry, I'm like already editorializing and I'm not done, but a lot of people agree that he was kind of a lousy commander-in-chief.
Yeah.
Like no one was really loving him at the time. A lot of people were outraged by what they saw was kindness to abolition, and it's like he was not kind to abolition. But then he had to go and get shot upside the head on Good Friday.
Oh, I didn't know it was Good Friday.
Yes.
Or care.
Sorry. Tell us how you really feel. So he was shot on Good Friday. He died on Saturday. And he rose as a saint on Easter Sunday. So this is why we have this legend of him.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, this is why he became a god, essentially. He stopped being a man the day that he was shot on Good Friday. He became a symbol.
Uh-huh.
And as a symbol, he's been in steady decline. And I think this is a good thing. He went from being like this divine worship. We were building all these fucking shrines to him. Mm-hmm. All these memorials. And then he kind of went into a farce. Like, a lot of people just started making fun of him when we got the internet and learned the truth about him, basically. But now it seems like people are kind of having a more nuanced view of who he was as a president. And he's become more of a man.
Yeah.
Which I think is good.
Yeah.
Actually.
Yeah, absolutely. No one's... Poebody's nerfed.
Yeah, exactly. Couldn't have said it better myself. He was a man. He was imperfect. He was racist, but he was nothing really out of the ordinary for his day. The shipping black people to Haiti for no reason, it was really fucked up, but it was a popular view at the time.
Yeah.
So he was just very representative of his time, and he was a compromiser who was pushed reluctantly by history.
Hmm.
So I'm just going to end with a quote. Bennett, he wrote this book. I started with his quote. I'm going to end with another quote. He said that Lincoln is a key, perhaps the key to the American personality. What we invest in him and hide in him is who we are.
Wow.
The end. Okay. I know. That was a lot.
It's all good information. And I think the listeners will appreciate, hopefully.
I feel like I've made a lot of enemies.
If you want to be well-informed, you have to understand that there are nuances. No one is a myth.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially if you are built up to be this mythological character.
You can only fall down. And exactly. That's a good thing, actually. Yeah. Because no one is a saint at all. And I hope people don't get upset that I was like making light of his whole life. I skimmed over his biography just because everyone knows it.
And if you
want it, like, you can find it on the internet.
Yeah, absolutely. Like we said, we're kind of like dispelling the mythology. Mm-hmm. And it's good to know that he was just a man.
It's refreshing to know he was just a man.
Yeah. I wish people cared more about the radical Republicans and that they were more famous, because I don't even know their names. I've said their names before, and the only one I know is William Seward, and the only reason I remember him so well is because he was from my hometown.
Yeah.
It's interesting, their story and what influence they did end up having on Lincoln in the end.
They forced him to do a lot of things he didn't want to do. I mean, they wanted him to go so much further.
Yeah.
But, like, absolutely. The fact that he did anything at all is because of them.
Yeah. Yeah. And history would have been different if they weren't there to have his, to bend his ear, you know?
Yeah.
I was just home recently, and it's really hard knowing as much as I know now about William Seward, who William Seward was and why he's such a fixture in that town. There's like, his name is on shit all over the town. Yeah. Harriet Tubman retired in my hometown of Auburn, New York. Yeah. There's museums, there's statues of her.
It was like a hub for abolitionists.
And then you look around now and there's fucking rednecks with Confederate flags and...
It was like Austin.
Yeah, and it's not like that at all anymore. It's so redneck.
Everything changes, know, and it's bittersweet, but it's just
how can you,
is.
You live in this town,
but they don't know their history.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
If they knew, they'd be like, what?
Yeah, it's just the...
He did what?
Irony isn't the right word, but like, it's sick that we are from this like hub of progressive thought, and you're flying a fucking Confederate flag.
Yeah.
Whew, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm ready to try to remix this drink.
It's not a bad drink. If you guys really like sweet drinks, it's very good.
I just can't drink another one that's this sweet.
The ice has diluted it a bit, and I think it's
better.
Still very sweet, but like drinkable.
So you add sugar to the lemon juice, and then there's also syrup. I think I'm going to skip the sugar.
You add sugar to the lemon juice?
Yeah, so I'm going to skip the extra sugar, just do the syrup, and use a dry wine, and see if that's better.
Okay, I'm excited.
Okay, we're back with a modernized, updated version of the 7th Regiment, what is it called? National Guard 7th Regiment Punch.
It's a lot of words.
I didn't 86 the sugar completely, but I reduced it, and I used a dry rosé, and it is a different cocktail.
It's spectacular.
It's delicious.
It's so, so good.
It literally is a different cocktail.
Not to say the first one was bad. Very sweet isn't a bad thing. It's just a matter of taste.
Totally. Some people would probably really enjoy it. For me and Stephanie, it wasn't the one.
Nope.
I'm glad we tried it, though, the way it was written. But I could not drink more than one of those.
No.
I took a sip of this and I was like, oh my God, this is delicious.
Yeah, the first cocktail, once the ice melted, I'm like, okay, I can get down with this. It was just... initially so sweet.
Yeah.
It made me not want to drink alcohol. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this should never happen.
This one is very drinkable.
I'm excited for my third one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. This one is
rubs
very drinkable.
Hands together.
Who knew? Just switching the sweet wine for dry wine, essentially. And it's like a different cocktail. So I guess it's time for me to start talking now that my jaw gums are...
I was just about to say, it's time for you to flap your jaw gums.
Today I am going to be talking about the legend, the mythology around Ronald Reagan. So Reagan he's often looked at by both conservatives and neoliberal Democrats alike as this wonderful, well-liked, jelly bean loving, every man president who carried us through the halcyon days of the 1980s when everyone was rich and everything was perfect.
Oh, yes. Eye roll.
Yeah. Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, and Nancy Pelosi have all waxed poetic about Ronald Reagan at one point or another.
But you have to.
Yeah, yeah.
So your peers will like you.
Yes. And conservatives seem to look at him as a god among men.
Yes. I'm surprised we don't have statues of him like we have of Lincoln.
You know, totally.
Right?
Yeah.
But he wasn't shot.
True.
I mean, he was shot at, but he didn't die. So I feel like, in a way, we're lucky that he didn't die because, good God.
Oh, my God.
The myth that they would make of him.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. That assassination attempt was really, really early in his first term, so the mythology wouldn't be quite the same. But, yeah, I know what you mean. Totally. So, while he was in office, he was one of the most popular presidents in history.
What?
Literally. Like, I think FDR might have been one of the only people ahead of him for approval ratings. People loved him.
When he was in office?
When he was in office. And
wow, okay.
Even today.
I didn't know that. I know people love him today.
Yeah. Polls show that 90% of Republicans,
of course,
and 60% of all Americans look at Reagan favorably today. So I would like to propose a post.
Ooh.
I would like to propose a post.
Thank you.
To wolves in sheep's clothing.
Ooh. Yes. Okay. Yes. I will drink to that.
I'm going to take another drink.
It is very good.
Dangerous.
Not to say the first one was bad, but oh my God.
It's a different drink.
Yeah.
It's a different cocktail.
It is a different drink, you're right.
With like switching one ingredient.
Wow. I'm like done.
Yeah. So let's talk about the real man behind the mythology, behind the legend. Ronald Reagan was born in 1911 in Northern Illinois. In 1937, he moved to California and he found work as an actor. I have seen a couple of his films, because I love TCM, so I'm always watching old movies.
You've seen his acting that's in air quotes?
Yes.
He wasn't good, right?
He was not bad. A good actor.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say he was bad, but he was just sort of second rate. He's like, okay. He played bit parts in big movies, and then the movies where he was like a lead role were generally B movies.
Okay.
His most famous role that people remember to this day is 1951's Bedtime for Bonzo, which
what?
Is about a couple of, I think they were psychologists or something, a couple that tries to raise a chimpanzee as a human child and like as an experiment. Yeah.
Okay.
The only movie that I have seen that he was in that I really enjoyed was a movie from 1939 called Dark Victory, but it's a Bette Davis movie and he plays a small role.
Yeah.
I'm a Bette Davis stan. I
live
my life.
Same, yeah.
But his role is relatively small. And Bette Davis, I've seen some interviews with her talking about like her relationship with Ronald Reagan, like in the 80s when she was old. People are like, well, did you ever work with Reagan? And she's like, oh yeah, little Ronnie Reagan.
Like,
yeah.
Mm.
Little Ronnie Reagan.
She pats his head.
Yeah. Later on in his career, he kind of got typecast. He did a lot of like westerns and a lot
That's
of army
what I thought.
Movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of pictures of him
He's
in like 10
gallon
hats.
Man.
Yeah. During his time in Hollywood, he was also married twice.
Oh.
His first wife's name was Jane Wyman. She was also an actress. And then his second wife was actress Nancy Davis. A.K.A. Nancy Reagan.
Yeah.
Later in his career, the movie roles started to dry up, and he ended up getting a job hosting a TV show called General Electric Theater, where they would sort of like retell story. Like
GE?
Yeah, GE. It was like paid for by GE. It was an advertising thing, but it was almost like Masterpiece Theater put on by GE.
Okay.
While he worked for GE, this is when he met a like super conservative someone who, like a colleague through GE, who basically coached him and like taught him to be conservative. Because before this, he lived his life for FDR.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was all, I mean,
I'm not shocked.
Yeah.
He's an artist.
Yeah.
So.
But this is when.
It sounds very familiar.
Yeah. While he worked at General Electric Theater, he suddenly became a socialism-hating conservative.
Well, he wanted to win.
In 1947, he became the president of the Screen Actors Guild in Hollywood.
Oh.
That's a little bit of a scandal right there. There was like, I didn't even really research it, but I saw that there was like, the board had to step down for some reason, and then he was put up in their place.
What?
I don't know. Yeah, I know.
Some weird coup.
Yeah.
Okay. into it.
So he used his time and his title as the president of the Screen Actors Guild, spying and snitching on his colleagues in Hollywood. He reported actors, writers, and filmmakers to the FBI.
No! For
Joseph
no,
McCarthy's...
No! Yes, he did?
Yes.
He did that shit?
Yes.
Oh, that's fucked up.
Yeah, for Joseph McCarthy's House Un-American Activities Committee.
Oh, that's fucked up. Wow. Yeah. You think that he would have some loyalty to the fact that, like, he's working with all these colleagues. These, like,
yeah,
artists and... Wow.
Nope. You know
so
what they say about...
So is that how he got ahead?
It's hard to say. Okay. If it, I'm sure it helped advance him.
Absolutely. It, yeah, the FBI is, yeah, like, out here loving you.
Yeah.
Like, that's a good
thing.
Yeah,
he's like an informant for the FBI. And you know what they say about snitches?
They get stitches.
No, snitches become president.
I haven't heard that one.
I think that's how it goes, right? That's the...
No.
So in a...
That's garbage.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no.
But that is garbage.
Bullshit.
Wow. Like, I hated him before I knew he was a snitch.
Yeah.
But wow.
Mm-hmm.
Of course he was a snitch.
Yeah.
Okay. There clearly has to be some sort of scandal of him becoming president and everyone stepping
down. I didn't even look into it.
Did they know that he was about to rat on all of them?
He was not the only person doing this at the time. Everyone was kind of snitching on everyone because McCarthyism was a really fucked up, scary chapter in American history.
Yeah, because you wanted to work.
If you held socialist beliefs, if you were a registered member of...
What does that even mean, though?
Like, literally, if you were a member of the Communist Party or the Socialist Party, you could be jailed. For having different political beliefs.
Wow. Land of the free.
Yeah. So, McCarthyism is a really weird chapter in American history, and I definitely... I've said this repeatedly, that I'm going to revisit this at some point.
It's big, though.
Yeah, it's a big story, so that's why I haven't gone into it yet. The Hollywood blacklist is a really interesting part of that, like a chapter in the larger story, so I think that might be how I approach it.
Yeah.
But I just haven't gotten there yet. Today, that's not what I'm going to be going into. This is just like... This is just, like, part of his bio.
Ah.
He was a snitch. That's
He snitched from 19...
Yeah, 1947. Yeah, literally. So stay tuned for when I do get back into McCarthyism eventually.
It's on his LinkedIn.
Yeah. Professional snitch.
Ask the FBI.
Yeah.
They know me.
They can give you references. Because of his snitching... And McCarthy's witch hunt, several many people were blacklisted, effectively banned from Hollywood, and their lives were ruined.
Yeah.
Thanks to fucking Ronald Reagan. If anyone's really interested in learning more about the Hollywood blacklist, there's a movie from a few years ago called Trumbo that's about a writer named Dalton Trumbo. It's all based on a true story about this writer who was a socialist and was blacklisted and then ended up writing under a pen name.
A writer for movies?
Screenplay writer. He ended up writing under a pen name and his movies won awards and then he sort of had to like be like, it was me all along. Trumbo, if anyone's interested. Yeah, it's good. But so back to Reagan. The General Electric Theater show was canceled in 1962. And by this point, Nancy and Ronnie's careers were both, you know, they were has-beens. The movie roles had dried up. They were getting older. Hollywood had no use for them anymore. So they're like, okay, I guess we need to figure out what the next step is for us. So they decided to use their names and their fame to transition into politics. The first step was to start giving speeches for other candidates, basically using their name as like, I'm Ronnie Reagan and I'm here to...
Did people really know him?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was in a lot of movies, like B movies, but people liked it. It's like fluffy kind of...
So who's like a equivalent B movie actor right now?
Like anyone that's like not starring in like super dramatic,
like
intense roles, but like...
Blockbusters?
Yeah, but like in just sort of silly fun, like an action movie, I'm gonna say like a Vin Diesel kind of a person, where like he clearly is not a good actor, but he's in fun movies. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So in 1964, he gave a speech for the uber conservative presidential candidate Barry Goldwater.
Yeah.
And this speech Goldwater lost the election, but the speech was so moving and so powerful.
It put him on the map, right?
It really did. Yeah. Republicans are like, oh my God, Ronnie Reagan.
Ooh.
Okay.
I see you.
And literally within like a few years, he was the governor of California.
Wow.
That's like, this speech was like a big deal. There's like Wikipedia pages for this speech.
So he was at the RNC?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
He was elected governor of California, and he was the governor for a long time. And then in 1976, he ran for president and lost. And then he ran again in 1980. And as we all know, he won, becoming America's 40th president and serving two terms from 1981 to 1989. And politics were never the same again.
No.
The world was never the same again. He was one of the first politicians to ever really pander to and mobilize the evangelical religious right in a big way. He himself was not religious. He generally avoided going to church, and he was the first president to ever be elected with a divorce. He was the first divorced man ever in the White House. But those little details, like going to church and having a divorce, they don't really matter to evangelicals as long as you're hateful.
Yeah. Facts.
Yeah. So the evangelical focus on...
It's like a checklist.
Yeah.
It's like divorce. It's like, okay, that's fine. Are you hateful?
Oh, yes. You're our guy.
We love you.
Yeah.
But also we love Jesus somehow.
But our version of Jesus.
We like the Old Testament.
Yes.
Jesus.
Totally.
He's our
nobody
guy.
Nobody needs that commie.
Fuck that hippie in the second.
Yeah, I know. Like,
part two is garbage. Mm-hmm. It's fake news. It's not real. The libtards. Just kidding. Tim.
Leave that in.
No.
It was basically the evangelical focus on quote unquote family values that gave Reagan his perfect cover for his real goal of targeting and attacking the rights of the poor, people of color, women, and gay people.
Everyone's favorite punching bag.
Yes, yeah. The thing he hated most of all, though, out of anything.
Commies?
Russia. Yeah, communism.
Yes, of course. I mean, that gave our nation like a rallying. I feel like after the Soviet Union collapsed, like we kind of, in a way, lost our way.
We didn't have a direction
anymore.
We just fucked up.
It's like we needed like a grand enemy that was mostly in our mind to coalesce in a way.
Totally.
It's fucked up.
Absolutely.
But it's true.
Yeah. Reagan, there were literally no lengths he would not go to rain on Russia's parade. No matter the cost, no matter how dastardly and underhanded things were.
Okay, so he was like JFK, but like how
on steroids.
JFK felt about Cuba.
Yeah, Reagan had a very different kind of like anything with any whiff of socialism. And he was like, I'm going to destroy you. It's insane.
And he didn't know that like communism and socialism were different? Or?
No.
Oh, okay.
We don't know that today, Stephanie.
Damn it.
Look at Facebook.
And he didn't have the internet,
so exactly.
It's not his fault.
But lots of people do, and they still don't realize that socialism and communism are two completely different systems.
Yeah.
I mean, look at like people attacking AOC as a commie. Like, you don't know what you're talking about,
but go on. Yeah, I know, right? But go on.
His obsession with fighting communism and anything that had even the vaguest, loosest resemblance to communism was called the Reagan Doctrine. And the Reagan Doctrine cost...
Do you have a doctrine?
That's what they call... It was basically like Reaganism. Wants to kill communism.
Oh.
Like throat punch communism. And it cost Americans billions and billions of dollars for him to run around the world trying to like fund...
No, Tux, they're the party of small government. This is lies. This is... I don't even know what you're saying.
Yes, yeah.
I don't understand these words coming out of your mouth. These true words coming out of your mouth.
So yes, this leads me to... So this is going to be, I mean, as you've already learned from Stephanie's story, this is going to be a slightly different format for us. I'm zooming out just to show you, like, Reagan did all these fucked up things.
Yeah, I'm picturing you in a meadow with a bag of stories, just throwing them over your shoulder. Here's a story.
And you get a story.
You're just skipping joyously through a field as one does, you know?
I mean, Reagan just doesn't deserve the reputation that he has, but eventually... Like, just like Stephanie, I probably will go back and revisit some of these, at least two or three of them.
Yeah, I have all the stories.
I'm so
glad you didn't, like, stop me, because I'm just like, okay. Wipe sweat from brow.
If anything really stands out to you and you want to hear more, please let us know. So about either of these, the stories that we're telling today, because it would be great to know how to prioritize what to bring up first. So first, probably the biggest scandal of the Reagan administration, and the one that people know the best, is the Iran-Contra scandal. Basically, what it boils down to is the Reagan administration basically sold a bunch of guns and shit to Iran in exchange for the release of some American hostages being held in Lebanon. This, of course, was after Reagan won the election, campaigning on the fact that he was going to be tougher on Iran than Jimmy Carter, and that he would never negotiate with terrorists.
Never.
But that's just splitting hairs.
That's what commies do. Yeah. And he's not a commie, you guys. Mm-mm. He's a patriot.
He couldn't be anything further from a commie. So then he used some of the profits from these arm sales to fund, arm, and trained a group of Nicaraguan terrorists called the Contras.
Ooh.
Because he really wanted to topple the new Nicaraguan government because it smelled like socialism.
This brings me back to JFK. It's like I'm getting JFK vibes all over.
So there were two huge problems with this plan. First of all, we had an arms embargo in place with Iran. So the sale of guns to Iran was illegal.
What?
I mean, that's just a small little detail. Nobody needs to know.
I forget that politicians, frequently presidents, are just above the law.
They're above the law.
Yeah.
Yes. And then the second problem was that Congress had just passed the Boland Amendment, which made it illegal to use government money to fund the Contras.
How specific?
I think they were like, I see you, Reagan, and we're going to...
That is like... That's amazing. That is so petty, but like, I love that they just like had their eyes on him.
He didn't care. He went ahead. So, in other words, he was basically
peppermint petty is what they were.
Yes, exactly.
They were Petty LaBelle.
Yeah. Amazing. Petty LaBelle.
I got this from Black Twitter. There's all these petties. There's like Tom Petty.
Amazing. But yeah, Reagan's running around just blatantly breaking the law because he wanted to like piss on some socialism. In fact, he even had created a new secret propaganda machine through the government called the Office of Public Diplomacy, specifically to try and get people to think of the Contras in a positive light. He was running around planting stories in newspapers, both in America and in South America, trying to get people to like the Contras.
Yeah.
He himself actually said, quote, that the Contras, Contra terrorists were, quote, the moral equivalent of America's founding fathers.
Wait, he said the Contra terrorists?
He didn't say terrorists.
Oh, okay.
The quote
How?
Yeah, no, he said the Contras are, quote, the moral equivalent of America's founding fathers. I said quote too early. Yes. The equivalent of America's founding fathers.
Wow.
Because they're protecting freedom. In reality, they were fucking monsters.
Dude,
the Contras.
Don't put this shit in print. Have your people say this shit. Mm-hmm. Like, don't say this with your own jaw gums.
I love jaw gums.
Me too.
So much.
Me too. It's my favorite.
So the Contras, with Reagan's help, they started kidnapping and torturing civilians, raping women, executing civilians, including children, seizing and burning down civilian homes.
Not the CVS. I'm just kidding.
And assassinating healthcare workers.
Oh, that's very malicious.
When all was said and done, as many as 50,000 people had died in the Contra killing spree. And the Reagan administration was later convicted of violating Nicaragua's sovereignty and encouraging crimes against humanity because the Reagan administration had fucking trained the Contras to do specifically what they did. They gave the Contras a handbook, a manual, written by the CIA, entitled Psychological Operations in Guerrilla Warfare.
Yes.
And it told the Contras specifically...
Fucked.
This is something I'm going to have to come back to, but it's such a big story.
I had PSYOPs on my list for season one. Shit is
It's dark. Dark.
It's dark like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah. Contras were told by it's the United States
like
government.
It's dark like Myrtle and Broadway at midnight. It's a most deaf quote. Oh, it's so, in Bushwick and we know where this is.
We
actually.
Know where this is. Yeah. But very few of our listeners.
Whatever. It's a rap lyric. Everyone should know. But it's that dark.
So the Contras were told specifically to, quote, provoke riots or shooting, and, quote, provoke mass murder so that it can be used as a tool for propaganda. After news about the story of both the Contras and the illegal arms deals broke, several members of the Reagan administration destroyed evidence of their involvement, and 14 major players in the administration, CIA, and military were indicted. Of course, Reagan was able to sort of like the peons below him were indicted, and he was able to claim innocence and ignorance of what was going on. And
that's sort of the
all of the scandals that I'm going to go into today. It's like he was never indicted for anything.
Of course.
And if you really wanted to, if you were a Reagan stan, you could say like, oh, he wasn't actually involved. He was the fucking president.
Exactly.
He was the president. If he wasn't involved, he was doing his job wrong. But he clearly knew what he
was doing. Exactly. Yeah. He's the chief commander of this country. He knows what's happening because he has to be briefed by law.
The Iran-Contra, like I said, is probably the best known and well-documented scandal of the Reagan administration. But there's plenty more. I have quite a few to go through.
Oh, no.
The next one,
better?
I'm not going to say worse, but like,
same level.
Everything is really fucked up. Everything is
I'm
fucked.
Already so upset.
Yeah.
And in a way, like, I feel better about my scandal, like my like myth busting, because this is so much worse. This is so much worse.
Yeah.
I thought that I was like crucifying Jesus in front of everyone. And now I'm like, oh, this man is like,
he's garbage.
Villain.
He's a villain.
He's like a villain,
literally.
Villain.
Like, whereas, dastardly. Like,
whereas Lincoln is like, everyone's a villain back then.
No, totally.
He's like a man.
He's just a guy.
He's just like, a dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, Reagan was
okay.
Dastardly. He's like a cartoon villain. Yeah. So there was also that one time that the U.S. government had involved itself with cocaine smuggling.
I remember that time.
Yeah. So the Reagan administration and the CIA, after Congress told them that, like, fuck it, Congress was so mean to them, telling them they couldn't outright fund the Contras. So then the CIA and Reagan had to come up with new, fun, and exciting ways of underhandedly funding them.
Drugs sell themselves, and it's
truly
a great way to get money for schemes.
Yes. Yeah, and then you get to blame the users of the drugs
exactly.
for doing them. Yeah. Good times.
Yeah, it's not your responsibility, like, what they do with these drugs that you sell them.
You know,
maybe they're going to just sprinkle them on the floor, you know?
Kill roaches
with them. It's like powder.
Yeah.
They're, like, powdering their baby's butt with it.
Amazing. So, yeah, the CIA and the Reagan administration came up with this plan to conspire with the Contras to smuggle cocaine into America from South America. Reagan's officials in the White House, including Oliver North. Oliver North was so deep.
Ooh.
So deep into this.
I know his name from many scandals.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, he comes up a lot and I'm like, oh, I'm not even going to touch him.
Yeah, totally. So they were deeply involved in cocaine smuggling, and then they sent all the proceeds to the Contra terrorists in Nicaragua. With the CIA's help, American...
No. They were patriots.
Yes, exactly. I'm sorry. I keep saying terrorists.
You keep terrorists like you're operating in a factual manner.
Yes. So American flight crews were smuggling guns to Nicaragua on planes using...
Commercial planes?
Commercial planes.
No.
With the CIA's help. And then once they unloaded all the guns, they would pack the plane full of cocaine and come back on the return flight. Smuggle all this cocaine back into the U.S.
Pause. What?
Yes. Like, someone's fucking abuela is flying to South America, and there's, like, machine guns under her seat, and she doesn't know about it. And then on the way
home...
What
year was this?
In the 80s.
Wow.
This is some Rambo shit. Like, they're the villains. They are the villains in
this
story.
This is like a Schwarzenegger movie.
Mm-hmm.
This is not real life.
Totally.
But there's just, like, guns on a commercial plane.
Yeah.
Like, kids running around,
totally.
Like babies screaming,
yeah.
And mothers trying to calm them. Meanwhile, underneath their seat, there's just like bags of drugs.
Totally, yeah. So once it was back in the U.S., then they sold this cocaine to drug kingpins so that it could be turned into crack cocaine. And then sold to the urban poor.
Of course. Dumped in L.A. and Watts.
Yeah. So the CIA's inspector general later testified that the Reagan administration was actively fighting against federal investigations into drug trafficking. At the same time, they were waging the war on drugs.
Of course they were.
They were enacting harsh drug laws and made it so that possession of crack cocaine, which is exactly what they were specifically making happen, possession of crack cocaine had a sentence 100 times harsher than that of powdered cocaine.
Yeah. Again, I haven't gotten into the 13th Amendment, but it punishes people who are convicted of a crime.
Yeah.
So if you have a little bit of crack,
yeah, like, you're a slave.
Goodbye.
No. Yeah, exactly.
Goodbye.
Yeah, so this triggered a mass incarceration epidemic that remains to this day and disproportionately affects black people. Surprise, surprise,
and especially
surprise.
Because the system itself is like, they make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
It's private, a lot of it. Some of it is public, but like most of it now is private.
Oh, everything is private now, yeah. Yeah, wow. So this was no accident,
Reagan
clearly.
Reagan is really the worst.
The fucking worst. He is a monster.
Yeah.
A monster.
Here I was feeling bad about crucifying Lincoln, who was just living his life in, like, the 1860s.
Yeah.
Just being a man of the 1860s, being super racist. But, like, this guy's, like, a villain.
I had such a hard time figuring out which stories to tell. I originally had 12 different scandals, and I had to cut, like, half of them. The ones I'm like, okay, misappropriation of taxpayer monies.
Who fucking cares?
No one's interested in that.
Zero people are interested in that. He's not about doing things that are right. He's like, oh, shit, like, I'm in charge.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh. I am the king of this bitch.
He does a shimmy.
Yeah. With jelly beans. He's got his jar of jelly beans.
I love that you said that I'm the king of this bitch. Like, that's my favorite phrase. Yeah,
I know. I stole that from you. I have appropriated it from you.
But it's true.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's real power. Yeah. It's like, ooh, who's going to tell me no?
Yes. Yeah.
No one.
So the next story that I have is that the Contras were not the only anti-socialist terrorists that Reagan was funding. This next story is not nearly as well known as the Iran-Contra story, but it is, I would say the consequences are a much bigger deal for us today. So in 1978, there was a revolution in Afghanistan.
Oh, no.
And they went from being an Islamic monarchy to it was called the Democratic Republic of Afghanistan, the DRA for short. And the new DRA government modernized and secularized Afghanistan in a way that no other Middle Eastern government had ever done before in history. One of the most noticeable and drastic reforms was a massive leap forward in women's rights.
It's like Iran in, like, the 60s.
Yeah, totally.
When they're, like, wearing, like, booty shorts.
Yeah, yeah, but even more progressive.
The British,
like,
fuck them.
Totally,
yeah.
The problem was that the Soviet Union vocalized their support for these reforms and for the new DRA government. So Reagan looked at the DRA and was like, y'all are a threat to democracy, aren't you? I see you over there.
I see you being democratic, but also being liked by Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck that shit. I see through this.
This democratic republic is clearly a threat to democracy, and I need to crush their government. So he, both privately and publicly, Reagan and the CIA began to support, fund, and arm, I think you've heard those words before, a series of jihadist militants in Afghanistan loosely named...
Freedom fighters.
These guys were loosely known as the Mujahideen.
Oh.
Yes.
Yes.
So Reagan and his administration funneled almost $5 billion of taxpayer money into his campaign against the DRA. And he even called the Mujahideen freedom fighters.
Yeah, they're like the founding fathers or whatever, you know.
And he invited them to the White House.
I'm sure he did.
Yes.
He has all the pictures with all of the quote-unquote terrorists now.
Yeah, with Reagan's blessing, these freedom fighters violently overthrew the new DRA government and instituted a repressive Islamic state in its place.
That was very favorable to the U.S.
Yes, exactly.
They crushed their population. They didn't give them rights, but they love the U.S.
Yeah, they sure did. Yeah, they removed all advances in all of these reforms for women's rights, economic reforms, and education reforms.
They're like, you don't need school.
You don't need all that.
I'm horribly depressed.
Yeah. So shortly after they gained control and instituted this repressive Islamic state, the Mujahideen fractured. And some of their forces became known as the Taliban. And
Wait, who? I've never heard of them.
Never heard of them.
Say that name again?
And others became Al-Qaeda.
Again, say that name. I've never heard these words.
Unfamiliar. Osama bin Laden himself got his start in the terrorism game by joining the Mujahideen, bolstered by Reagan and the CIA. And in 2004, the BBC claimed that bin Laden was not just supported by, but also given military training by Reagan's CIA.
Because he was.
Yes. Wow. Others have corroborated this story, including British government officials and an FBI whistleblower. But of course, the U.S. denies all of these reports.
But isn't there paperwork on this? Wasn't it declassified? I feel like it was declassified.
Look over there.
Oh, a ball of yarn.
Yes.
So wait, this ball of yarn, is it wool
or cotton? Oh, I see.
Wow.
Yes. So Reagan did not just hate socialists and communists, though. He also hated gay people. Surprise.
What?
Yes.
What? He didn't love all people?
Yes. So it was an open secret that the Reagan administration believed that AIDS was, quote, nature's revenge on gay men.
Oh, that's right, because in the 80s.
Yes. According to, literally, quote.
No, wait. Whose quote is this?
This is Reagan's communications director.
No.
Nature's revenge on gay men.
No. No.
And that they, quote, they were only getting what they justly deserved.
They said this.
It's on record. So AIDS literally coincided with the beginning of the Reagan presidency.
Oof.
It started basically just when he got into office with just a couple of cases, but nobody really knew what it was or where it was coming from. But Reagan generally just ignored it and let it spread completely unchecked because he did nothing about it.
Yeah.
Amidst this government silence. In 1982, about 600 people died from AIDS. 600 people is a lot of fucking people for
young
a disease
people.
That
young
nobody
people
knows.
In their prime.
Yeah, young men in their prime. Nobody knows what the disease is, where it's coming from, what's causing it. Nobody knows a fucking thing. And Reagan was like, well, they're all gay, so who gives a shit? By 1984, the death toll had reached nearly 5,600.
Wow.
You would think that the government might take notice and try and do something about...
656? Like, it just jumped 5,000.
Yeah, no big deal.
You know.
In 2 years, So you would think the government would try to do something. That did not happen. It is a gay disease. Who cares? When repeatedly pushed...
Gay people are also citizens?
No.
Look at me being stupid over here.
Technically, sure, but like... So, when he was repeatedly pushed on what Reagan's thoughts on the AIDS crisis were and what his plan was going forward, the White House press secretary just avoided the question and insinuated that the reporter who was asking the question must be gay because he was so concerned about it.
And who cares?
The whole fucking room
erupted
in laughter.
What year was this?
Like 84, 85, yeah.
Just laughing?
Everyone's like, ha ha ha, he might be gay. Hilarious.
That's crazy that happened so recently.
Yeah.
84 was a long time ago, but also
not a long time ago at all.
Like, we were alive.
Yeah.
As babies.
I was
but still.
One.
I was one as well.
Yeah.
But still.
So Nancy Reagan, obviously, like I said, Nancy had been an actress in Hollywood when she met her husband, Ronnie.
They both worked in Hollywood. This is fucking...
So Nancy was friends with Rock Hudson... who was closeted, but he was gay. It was a secret, but he was gay. He contracted AIDS. In 1985, he was in France and got really, really sick and had to go to the hospital. And he reached out to his friend, Nancy Reagan, to ask her for help getting into a military hospital for treatment for AIDS. He thought if he could get into this military hospital, he would have a better service or whatever. So he reached out to the Reagans asking for help, specifically looked to his friend, Nancy. Her response?
Oh, no.
New phone. Who dis?
Not sure.
Reagan, in fact, didn't actually even say the word AIDS publicly until 1985.
Wow.
1985.
Wow. And you're the president.
I know.
I mean, people are dying, and yes, they're paying taxes, and they're like our citizens, but like...
They're gay. Who cares? Yeah, and he didn't actually officially address the AIDS crisis until 1987. When his second term was almost over and over 20,000 people were dead. 20,000 people and many, many more infected.
I have so many questions and I don't want to... This is an overview of all fuckery.
I know.
But 20,000 people are dead. That's so inhumane.
And you think?
So disturbing.
Yeah.
This is our commander-in-chief who just... this is really upsetting.
Yeah. There's a movie called The Band Played On that's sort of like about how the CDC was trying to fight to get funding for research and everything. And no one was like, no one cares. Why are you trying to do this? The only reason they, this is not in my outline, but the only reason anyone even started to care was that like people who are like hemophiliacs and needed blood transplants.
Oh, started getting
straight
it.
Straight people started getting it.
Straight people. A child did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the government knew that this was happening and the CDC knew it was happening and they didn't do anything about it because they were like, well, it's just a small number of people. So who cares? It's going to be too expensive to test the blood.
You're the literally. United States government.
No.
You got the money to test the blood?
That movie,
What?
The Band Played On. It's really...
It's fucked up. Okay, I'm horrified.
But don't feel left out, Stephanie. Don't feel left out. Reagan also really hated black people, too.
I mean, I know that.
Before he got into politics, Reagan was on record opposing all of the civil rights bills of the 1960s.
Of course.
Including the Civil Rights Act of 1964, the Voting Rights Act of 1965, and the Fair Housing Act of 1968. Yeah. He continued this pattern as president by gutting the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, fighting the extension of the Voting Rights Act, vetoing the Civil Rights Restoration Act, which required all recipients of federal funds...
This is the Reagan I know.
Yes. ...to comply with civil rights laws, and opposing the creation of Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
I'm aware.
Yes.
Yeah.
He even tried to veto an anti-apartheid bill in 1986, but thankfully Congress overrode his veto, thereby putting a law into place that helped cripple South Africa's pro-apartheid government, leading to the official repeal in 1991. So this man is one hateful son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Who hurt him?
Seriously, that's a very good question that I don't care to know the answer, because fuck him.
Exactly, he deserved to be hurt, because he hurt so many people.
There are a lot of hurt people doing great things.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
So... Fuck him.
So he also hated both the mentally ill and poor people.
Shocked.
He is, in fact, directly responsible for increasing the homelessness problem in America.
I did know that.
Yeah. It all started when he was actually the governor of California. In 1967, he signed a bill into law that was designed on paper to make it harder to commit someone to a mental facility against their will.
Okay, cool.
But in reality, what it actually did was defund mental health facilities.
Wow.
And it ended up forcing more than half of the state of California's mental health patients out of the hospitals and onto the streets. More than half. Yes. And with nowhere for them to go, and many of them having disabilities that prevented them from holding steady jobs, they just became homeless. And Reagan was not the only governor who was doing this kind of thing at the time. Things got so bad in the 1970s that there was like a national mental health crisis.
I mean, obviously,
and Congress was impelled to act. So in 1980, Jimmy Carter signed the Mental Health Systems Act into law. The idea was to reform and rebuild America's mental health system by developing community mental health programs and providing mental health services for Americans suffering from chronic mental illness.
This is in the 70s.
They were fighting for it in the 70s. It was signed into law in 1980.
Okay.
By Jimmy Carter. But Reagan took office in 1981, and he repealed the law. Within 1 year, the law was repealed.
Wow. Yeah, because we had all these, like, Vietnam vets coming back.
Totally,
like,
yeah.
People coming back with PTSD.
Thanks for fighting. See you later.
Good luck
Lose
with
my
this
number.
New phone, who dis?
Yeah.
Horrible, debilitating condition. Like, just good luck, and thank you for your service. Mm-hmm.
So, in 1984... On Good Morning America, Reagan defended himself against charges of callousness towards the poor by saying, quote, "People who are sleeping on the grates, the homeless, are homeless, you might say, by choice."
Yeah, because we love sleeping outside, you know.
It's so nice in California.
And also, people are so nice to us.
Yes.
So it's why would I get a job when everyone's
it's
just like,
basically
hey.
Glamping.
Oh, basically. Yeah. They're in a teepee.
Yes.
They're getting all this cucumber water.
Terrazzo floors. And
fuck Reagan.
Literally fuck him.
I mean, oh, maybe Lincoln wasn't so bad. You know, he was
right?
Okay.
Yeah.
He said the N-word all the time in speeches, but like... He wasn't doing all this, you know?
Yeah.
Thank you for this.
Yes, yes. For making Lincoln feel not so bad.
Yes.
So during Reagan's presidency, 40,000 beds in state mental hospitals were eliminated. And in 1988, the National Institute of Mental Health estimated that between 125,000 and 300,000 mental patients...
300,000?
Yes. Mental patients with chronic mental illness were now homeless, thanks to Reagan.
300,000 people.
It's insane.
Damn it.
He hated all sorts of things. He
Black people, gays, poor, go
socialists,
on.
Conservatives,
socialists,
conservatives.
Yes. Not conservatives.
Oh,
I'm like, what?
Where did that come from? I'm thinking of myself, I think. Communists is what I meant to say, yes.
Communists, yes, yes.
He also hated unions.
Of course.
Even though he was the president of a union just a few years earlier.
Shut up, facts!
I know. But this probably goes back to his disdain for socialism. When Reagan ran for president, a few unions threw their weight in behind him. One of the biggest was the Professional Air Traffic Controllers Organization, also known as PATCO. So after Reagan was elected, nearly 13,000 government-employed PATCO air traffic controllers walked off the job in an effort to improve their working conditions.
Wildcat strike?
Yes.
Hell yeah.
They knew this was a risk because as federal employees, the law forbade them from participating in any kind of strike whatsoever.
Which is garbage.
Bullshit.
It should be illegal, but America.
Yeah. Yeah. But so they figured it was okay. They had thrown their weight in behind Reagan. He was going to protect them.
Aww.
You know what he did?
Oh, sweet.
He fired them.
Of course.
All of them.
I heard about this.
13,000 air traffic controllers.
Gone.
Overnight.
Mm-hmm.
His justification
they
for this.
They brought the army in, right?
Yeah.
Like, we can do this shit.
Yeah. His justification for this, I mean, obviously, it was against the law for them to do this because they're government employees, so they're not supposed to strike. But his real justification was that the walk-off constituted a, quote, peril to national safety.
Yes.
As if having to find and train thousands of new air traffic controllers overnight was not going to be a peril to national safety.
National safety and national security, it's just a word that you say when you don't want to do.
It's insane.
What other, I was going to say, they don't give two shits. They don't give one shit.
One quarter of a shit. Maybe a shart.
I would say that they, at least 60% of them give a shart. But like most of them don't give one shit. They're like writing on a paper, I give you a shart.
Yes. Well, compromise.
Yeah. Politics.
So it took a full decade for federal air traffic controllers to get back to the staffing and training levels that they were at before Reagan fired all of the fucking air traffic controllers.
Oh, that's scary.
Right? But it wasn't a peril to national safety. What was a real peril was unions.
Who cares about all these commercial flights?
Right?
you know, over a decade. Fuck that.
One decade.
That's a long ass time.
So before Reagan intervened in the PATCO dispute, using replacement workers to end a strike was a huge faux pas. It was a no-no. It was not illegal, but nobody was doing it because it was just like, it just wasn't done. Like, there was an unwritten rule that everyone was like,
okay. It's a bad look.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a bad look.
Until the president does it. And then it's no longer a bad look.
Like, racism.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
I'm like,
totally.
I'm thinking about 22. I'm like, it is a bad look until you see someone higher than you doing it. And you're like, oh.
No, now it's fine. I can just openly.
He got my back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They essentially lost the power of the strike because the strikes could be shut down by being replaced. And without the power to strike, unions, like overnight, unions became drastically less effective. Yeah,
we lost so many unions in like the 80s.
No, at their height, nearly 40% of all workers in the private sector belong to a union. Of course, that number today is somewhere around 7%.
That's insane. 7%?
Yeah. And it used to be 40 years ago, it was 40%.
In most other countries, it's like 50%.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of problems with unions, but like...
But a lot of the problems with the unions, people don't want to pay the dues. The reason people are leaving unions is because you don't want to pay the dues if they're not effective. If they were effective and you could strike and strike meant something, people didn't mind paying the dues. There's a reason people have left
their
unions.
The way that like unions are done in this country are different from the way that they're done abroad. All but one of my German cousins, and I have five of them, belong to a union, and they have different rules in their unions, and it's seen as a positive thing. It's like, oh, you work for a company that doesn't have a union, like, yikes.
My mom is a postal worker, and she just left her union because they didn't have her back on multiple things.
Yeah, in Europe, they have your back so hard.
She was basically like, why am I paying into this if they're not going to do shit for me? But she was the union rep. Then when she had a problem, they were like, well, because they have no power. They're government employees, because it's the post office.
Ugh, so terrible.
Yeah.
This is a larger conversation that will probably be cut.
I don't know. The bottom line is, if you have ever wondered why wages just straight up stopped increasing in America at some point in the last few decades, the answer is the destruction of unions.
Absolutely.
So my last and final topic for today's discussion of why Reagan is garbage is the fiscal policy that Reagan unleashed on the world. It goes by many different names. Voodoo economics, trickle-down economics, supply-side economics. The best known is probably Reaganomics.
Yes.
Whatever you call it, the basic thinking is that wealthy people are job creators. And so the best way to boost an economy is to cut taxes on the wealthy so that they can use all that extra money to create jobs. And eventually, that extra money will trickle down to us poors. Did it work? It must have, right? If we're still fucking talking about it as a viable economic policy today, it had to have, right?
Clearly.
Well, it certainly did for the rich. The stock market was booming. Corporations were mopping up record profits. The shoulder pads had never been bigger, and cocaine was flowing like waterfalls. Was it working for anyone else, though? Spoiler alert, no, it was not.
Damn it. I was crossing my fingers, guys. Yes.
Income inequality became significantly worse under the Reagan administration.
What?
Yes. And it has only gotten worse since. Wages for the average worker declined, and the nation's homeownership rate plummeted. During Reagan's 2-term in the White House, the number of people living beneath the federal poverty line rose by 6.5 million. 6.5 million? Yes.
Wow.
Reagan had campaigned on the idea of reducing government spending. In reality, he increased government spending while cutting taxes.
Of course. That's what you do as a Republican.
Yes. He drove up the national debt and basically doubled the military budget while slashing funds for domestic programs that were specifically designed to protect and assist working class Americans.
Who?
They're not people. What? Working class. So by the end of Reagan's second term, federal assistance programs had been slashed by 60%. Schools, libraries, hospitals, and fire departments closed across the country from lack of funding. But the most dramatic were saved for low-income housing subsidies and welfare programs.
I'm shocked by this.
Reagan,
I thought he was going to cut the police.
Yes.
Guys, I was over here.
He actually did. This was before the police were militarized. So he
Yeah. They just had like regular guns.
Yeah, exactly. Not, like, yeah.
Battlefield body armor against peaceful protesters.
So Reagan is often referred to as the Great Communicator.
Really?
That's his nickname, yes. What he was really communicating was lies. He was telling us fucking lies.
The Great Communicator?
That is his nickname, yes.
Oh, that's new to me.
Because people listen, like, he loved to talk to the public.
Oh, because he was an actor.
Yeah, exactly. So he was going around the country giving speeches, campaign rallies, you might say.
on Juneteenth exactly. In Tulsa?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So he loved to give these speeches, especially on the topic of rolling back the welfare program.
Oh, yes. Welfare. Wink, wink, wink.
Yes. And during these speeches, one of his favorite topics to bring up was the story of the welfare queen. Yes. You know the story of the welfare
queen. Everyone knows the story of the welfare queen.
Yes.
Yeah. It's
so there was this absurd welfare queen from Chicago who was running around driving a Cadillac.
Chicago's where all the black people are, you guys.
Don't tell anyone.
She was really light-skinned, but like she was still black.
She had ripped off the government to the tune of $150,000, was driving around in the Cadillac.
$150,000? That's
not that much money, right?
What?
That's like half of a Cadillac. What is she? Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah. No, she was scamming the government.
Amazon could just like not pay taxes, but whatever. Go on.
So she's scamming the government using 80 aliases.
Oh.
30 addresses.
Okay.
A dozen social security cards. And 4 made-up dead husbands. Reporters, because Reagan loved to talk about this welfare queen as an example of why poor people...
money.
I know, $150,000 is nothing.
And she's doing all so this much work.
Yeah, like, so much work.
In my mind, like, pay her. Because
literally,
she's doing, like, all this
she deserves,
fucking paperwork.
This is a full-time job.
A
this is 2 full-time jobs.
2. I agree. She's not even making a lot.
No.
Yeah.
So reporters are obsessed with her. They're like fascinated by this story because Reagan keeps fucking telling it.
If she was white, who fucking cares?
I know. But so they're like, we need to interview her so we can talk about...
Because
like,
she's the only one and we can't find others that are similar. Like, let's find her.
Well, guess what? It turned out that she didn't exist.
What?
He made the whole fucking thing up. There was no welfare queen.
Wow.
She did not exist.
That is garbage.
And this phony imagery of welfare queens
we love
persists
welfare
to
queen.
This day.
To this day, yeah.
40 years
Black
later.
People are just trying to get all that money.
Mm-hmm. To this day, this remains a means of targeting and attacking the poor, vilifying anyone who needs any form of public assistance. And it was all made up. It was all bullshit.
Wow. But it was such a story that like everyone can jump on.
Totally.
Like, yeah. Black women want things. They're like, they think they're owed
They think
things.
They deserve an iPhone.
Yeah. Sure. Yes. Wow.
But the bottom line is Reaganomics was not a new system. Everyone acted like it was a brand new system that Reagan had just thought up. But you know what? Moving things around so that the government... made sure that rich people stayed rich was not a fucking new system.
No.
The only thing that was new about it
Tales
was his lies about the possibility that it might trickle down to the poor.
If you
just wait long
That's
enough,
true,
if you just hold out, you might see the benefits too.
Wait for it.
Just wait for it.
Wait for it.
It's been 40 years, but it's coming.
Be patient.
Hold your horses. You might die before it happens, but it'll happen. Yes, exactly.
So just be more like Christ and just like, shut the fuck up.
Yes.
Like, I don't want to hear this.
Yeah. What it boils down to basically is Reaganomics was a massive redistribution of wealth from one
this
segment of
learned.
Society to another. I think there's a name for that kind of thing. I feel like it might be a dirty word. I don't know. Some people talk about it like it's a bad thing, but I can't. Redistribution of wealth.
I feel like it starts with an S, but like maybe it starts with the C. Satanism.
Yeah,
like,
that's what it is.
I don't know.
The 80s were also that whole like satanic panic
so
era.
Weird.
Oh my God. Okay, so this is the end of my tale of the bullshit of the mythology of Ronald Reagan as a good guy. In summation, if you will, we live in an America that Ronald Reagan helped to create.
Absolutely.
If he had never been president, we would be living very, very different lives today. You could argue this of any president, that if any president hadn't been president, maybe things would be different. But Reagan completely changed the game, both politically and like
he was doing world a lot. History. It wasn't just in this country. He was doing a lot of things geopolitically.
Exactly, yeah.
Like fucking up other countries.
Domestically, he pushed the Republican Party so far to the right that the entire center shifted.
Yeah.
I mean, essentially, today's moderates would be considered hardline Republicans 40 years ago. Hardline conservatives.
Yeah.
But also, he left his mark on the entire world through all of his meddling and shit-stirring. Basically, Ronald Reagan was the fucking worst.
He was really, really bad. Wow.
And it's fucked up that people still love him.
Love him.
Love him.
Stan. I know people who are named Reagan after him. Unfortunately, gross. I met them all at Cornell.
It's 40 years later and things are terrible now. And he is the reason why.
But if
not
you're
the only reason.
If you're
but
a straight white person, you're like, oh God, he created a utopia for me.
But even if you're a straight white person, you're poorer today than you would have been 40
Absolutely.
Years ago.
Yeah, because the unions, yeah.
People like to put up blinders and leave the dots unconnected.
Look at you connecting dots like a socialist. That's what they do, you guys.
I mean, we're still talking about fucking Reaganomics. Like, it's not the world's dumbest and most ineffective economic model. I'm just going to leave it by saying, here's hoping that the next generation of politicians see Reagan for who he really was and start pushing the center back to where it was before he changed our world.
Huh. Well, America's history is juicy. We just add really sweet wine and brandy and a whole bunch of like raspberry juice and lemon. And it's really sweet, but really delicious.
If you cut back the sugar and add dry wine, you're golden.
I like all these like caveats. Yes. Like, but actually, if you add this and that.
America's history is much more delicious if you use dry wine instead of sweet wine.
Facts. Hashtag facts. So thank you so much for listening to Beyond Reproach. This has been Stephanie Domingo.
And Tux Lertle.
Thank you to Tim Clough, our editor, our the love of our lives, our podfather.
I swoon.
We stand hard. We cannot do this without him.
Tim thank gives you. Me the vapors.
Tux just threw himself on his fainting couch. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Beyond Reproach is proudly recorded in Bushwick, Brooklyn. New episodes are released the first and third Monday of every month. Please note that we are not historians. We are just a couple of drunks who never shut up and love history. Full list of all source information can be found in the show notes on our website. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe. Written reviews are especially important. If you like us, please do one of two things. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or send this episode to a friend, family member, or someone you think would be into it. Don't forget to follow us on social media. Make sure you follow us on Instagram because we post our cocktail recipes the Thursday before each full episode. Please drink along with us if you are not driving. We also have a shop at beyondreproachpod.com. Get your merch, brand yourselves. We are on Patreon if anyone would love to show us some love and throw us some nickels to support the production of our show.